Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, where we talk about the biggest and the best films that are coming to theaters, that are streaming online, and maybe more. Maybe they're playing live to people all over the world internationally. And that's right, we're going to open up the show here with a little talk about the Oscars to help me do it. Well, first of all, I'm John Agroni from the San Francisco Bay Area, film editor for YoungFolks.com, and he's over here. He's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's a news and entertainment writer at Collider.com, and he just started a new position as Will Smith's publicist, and he's very excited. He's been off the internet all day. Hey, it's Will Ashton. Welcome back.
You've been very busy day in that front. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish you all the best, I suppose. Will Ashton, I don't know if the listeners didn't listen to our Oscars episode that we did on Friday. We picked the winners, as we do every year.
Well, if we picked the winners.
If we picked. Well, we still picked them. You know, it wasn't an if, it was a when. We did it. We picked them, and they did not all of them won, obviously. Very little of our picks won. That's fine.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I don't think we were predicting who would win. We were predicting who we would pick if we
Yeah, we
voting.
Put in, like, little gentle sort of like, hey, you know, this person could win.
But yeah, I mean, some of our predictions didn't pan out, but some of them did.
That's how it goes every year. But, you know, I mentioned on the show, that past show, if people didn't listen, that I wouldn't be watching the Oscars this year. You know, the first time I haven't watched the Oscars live in I don't know how many years. But, no, I didn't. And I had other things to do. I mentioned already that I had a nice dinner with my partner. Her birthday's coming up. And so we did that. And it's so funny because so we get home, right? And everything is all is well. I'd only gotten like two notifications about the Oscars, like two of the winners, because they were like historic wins or whatever. So I didn't really know. I didn't know anything. I had no idea what was going on. She was the one who came to me and was just like, she basically showed me the Will Smith like thing, but like through memes, basically, because she had just opened up Instagram and it was everywhere. This moment, apparently, I missed one of the biggest WTF Oscars moments in like history. Is that
of course? Yeah. I mean, I was gonna obviously talk to you about it, but I was like, I knew you weren't watching it this year, so I didn't want to spoil it for you. I didn't know if you were going to watch it later.
Yeah, you were vague and coy about it. You were just like, well, you sure picked a year to skip.
Right. I didn't want to be the one that spoiled that for you, because I wanted you to experience that moment with as much, you know, sort of confusion and, you know, whatever the word would be, as everyone else felt.
I can't even imagine like watching it live, because I just saw the image, right?
Right.
I didn't know any of the context. I didn't know what the joke Chris Rock had said. So for people who don't know, what happened was that Chris Rock was about to introduce the best documentary feature, and he was like making jokes. He joked about Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz. And then he joked about Jada Pinkett Smith, who, you know, Will Smith is her husband, and he made a joke at her call, you know, can't wait for G.I. Jane 2, because she, you know, she's bald. She's been very open about how she has alopecia, and, you know, it's not a stylistic choice. She's bald because of that. I think it's a disease, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I watched the clip, basically, like, it looked like Will Smith was kind of laughing at the joke.
Right.
That's but then she was not pleased with it, right?
Yeah, that's a weird thing, is that when I watched it live, like, I mean, I could tell that she wasn't a fan of the joke.
Yeah, she rolled her eyes. Why wouldn't she? It was a lame joke. I didn't like it.
Right. But I didn't really chalk up much to Will Smith's reaction. So when this all happened, I kind of thought that he was upset as well at the moment. But like you said, rewatching the clip, he's clearly laughing, not like even fake laughing. Like he's like, hey, that's a pretty good joke. And then all of a sudden he walks up, and in that moment you're kind of like, oh, like maybe he's going to like razz him a little bit, like give him a, like, you know, like do something. Because the stage, the way it designed it this year, is that it's a little bit more on the ground level. So there's not like a way you got to like walk up like you traditionally do.
What a mistake. I mean, right. In retrospect, they're going to have like a spiked wall next year.
But there's like usually like scaling steps you have to do. Like famously, Jennifer Lawrence fell on those when she accepted her Oscar.
What a klutz.
Right. But I, you know, I mean, like, there's usually kind of like an ascent you have to do, whereas this year they made it like a flat. So it's like sort of like a like a runway model kind of thing. But yeah, he goes up to that and you like think he's gonna, like, oh, he's going to like, you know, razz him a little bit. And then all of a sudden
I'm going to grab like the microphone and be like, oh, Chris, you don't rock tonight.
But at least on the American broadcast, there's like a freeze. And then like all of a sudden, like it's silent for a long time. And you can hear, or you don't hear, but you see Chris Rock is stunned, and you see Will Smith is like yelling something at him, but it's all censored on the broadcast. So
right,
you're like, obviously, what's happening?
But not and the international just, broadcast.
Right. Well, yeah, but I'm talking about when I was watching it live with my roommate.
The American, they censored
it. Yeah, like there's like this long censor, and it's like, what's happening? Like, was this intentional? It doesn't seem like it's intentional because the swear, and there's like obviously like a pause in the room now, and the audio cuts back in. And it's Chris Rock being like, "This is the best Oscars ever," or something along those lines. Yeah, I don't remember.
Like,
exactly.
This is the biggest Oscars moment in television history, right, or something,
that. But yeah, it's just like watching, it's just like, what? Like, clearly there's like a poll, like there's like a pause in the room. Like, you know, like there's like a sense of like, okay, the mood has shifted. Like there is tension in the room now. And I feel bad for Questlove because, you know, he gives like a very sincere and moving speech, but like everyone is just like checking their phones, being like, what just happened? Like, what's going on? Like all this stuff.
Yeah. Questlove won for Summer of Soul, which, right, you know, was a great win.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and then Will Smith's speech, which I don't know if you've seen yet because you haven't watched the show, but there's...
No, I haven't. I heard snippets of it, or I read snippets of it, but like what he said when he won Best Actor for King Richard, where he was just love makes you do crazy things, I think was what he said.
Basically, yeah, he's like, love makes you do crazy things. He was kind of implying that he was still channeling Richard Williams and that he was like maybe even still in character, which is bizarre because like they've shot
that
movie.
Weird. Yeah, that's you had some time to think of a better excuse, dude. But no, I mean, he literally like, because I watched the Australian broadcast because that was floating around Twitter.
The
and
clip.
You see you mean, him, the yeah, clip. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's just like, he's like storming the stage.
Right.
And like, it's hard to tell if he's punching Chris Rock or slapping him.
No, he slaps him like, and it's like kind of
there
like
were people who thought it was
like
a punch because of the angle.
Yeah, right. But no, it's definitely a slap. There's a lot of photos of it now where he clearly like open arm slaps him in a way. It's like meant to be a hit, but I can't tell if he was like holding back and like not wanting to hit him too hard or if he wanted it to be a more dramatic hit. It's kind of hard, or if, you know, like he just
he looks so self-satisfied, like right after he looks so self-satisfied, you know.
Oh
like
yeah, he has a swagger
suit. He's just like, I pulled that off, you know.
Right. Yeah, like, there's a swagger
the
in his
hubris
step. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he goes to sit down and then he's yelling at Chris Rock. It's like, keep my wife's name out your effing mouth, you know.
Right.
And so that's why the silence happened, right?
Right.
Like, and they had to bleep him out.
Well, I mean, if you watch that clip, like, there's people are still laughing because they think it's like a thing they set up beforehand. Like there was like a bit they did, but then when he says it the second time, like clearly that's when like there's like a big pause room. Like no one's laughing,
right.
No one's saying anything at that moment. And
I saw some of the like reactions of like some of the celebrities around, like Lupita Nyong'o, who were sitting at his table.
Right.
Was just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like it's like the Veep, you know, GIF. You know, she's like, what is happening?
There are a couple reaction shots to that. I know Nicole Kidman has a pretty good reaction shot, but I saw like a collage and like everyone is just like confused and stunned. And then you see like Jason Bateman like like laughing. Like I don't know if he just thought it was like still a bit, just like, they really pulled this one off. But
more like he's a horrible boss. But thinking too that like Chris Rock handled it pretty well. Like he looks,
he's
shaken up, you know, but he takes it. And he's just like, what, dude? Like, it's a joke, you know? He's like, it's a joke about G.I. Jane. And he's just, he says it again, like, keep her name out of your mouth. And then he's just like, I will know. And then he just kind of like stumbles into it. But I can't imagine, like, what he must have been just like, what in the world is going on right now?
Right. I mean, like I said, it's just a very bizarre turn of events because, like, you see only a few seconds before that Will Smith is laughing at the joke, like it's not like an insincere way, and then all of a sudden he's like well, I mean, the fact that Will Smith slapped anybody is also fairly bizarre. Like I know there was like an incident with like a Men in Black 3 premiere where like a reporter kissed him and he like kind of like lightly smacked him, and that was like the only other time where like Will Smith like had like a altercation, because people like that's what I think is so shocking for people about this, that Will Smith, rightly or wrongly, people have this image that surely he's, you know, crafted over the years with Fresh Prince and stuff, where, you know, like he's kind of like the affable, lovable black guy who's like, you know, like he has good values and like he, you know, like he you know, like people like, I guess, expected kind of a more squeaky clean sort of image with Will Smith. And the fact that like he did such a like outlandish sort of violent thing to Chris Rock, I think that's what people find so surprising about this whole incident.
I found it surprising. Like, I mean, it's totally unacceptable. Like so many things about this were messed up. First of all, like you know, him attacking this guy over a joke is just so beyond the pale. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, there's no justification whatsoever to hit anybody, you know, over a joke like that. Especially, like, you're on TV, you're a role model, you, like, there is just so much wrong with that, right? And it's not, I mean, I get it, like, the joke's in poor taste, but yeah, that's sure. pretty... some of the people who are just sort of being like, I would have done that. It's just like, what in the world is wrong with you?
Well, yeah. I mean, the big thing to point out is that there is history, I guess, with this where Will Smith, I forget what, or not Will Smith, Chris Rock hosted the Oscars in, was that like 2015? What year was it that he hosted? Was it 2016?
I don't remember. It was quite a while ago, though.
I mean, it was like the second time he had hosted because he had previously hosted.
2016, I think.
Yeah, 2016. It was after the Oscar So White controversy. And I remember it was because
he joked about Jada Pinkett Smith skipping the ceremony.
Yeah, he was joking about how she was boycotting the ceremony, and he made like a reference how like she wouldn't be invited there anyway or something like that. And so I think that was potentially some of the history going on there with, like, there was already kind of bad blood between there and the Oscars where, like, I feel like,
I mean, they're they're not exactly like, I don't usually think of Will Smith and Chris Rock in the same sort of orbit, you know.
Sure.
You know, Chris Rock's a comedian. I don't think they've ever really worked together, or mm-hmm. there's not much overlap there.
Sure. But I mean, yeah, they are also two of the most prominent Black male performers working today, so there's just like, yeah,
well, I assume,
like,
they know each other because they're celebrities, but I'm just sure. saying that, like, it's not like any feud or lack of is something that I had ever been like made aware of, you know. It's like,
right, yeah,
like drama yeah. between the two is never something that's hit my radar. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, either way, it's just stupid, like, what he did right. there. And also, you know, it's a little bit like, oh, did you do that to like put on a show for your wife or something? Like,
well, that's what I'm thinking
confused
is,
about it,
right? Because that's why, like, I have to assume, because he was laughing at the joke only a few seconds before. So, like, why else?
Unless, like, I know I was partly wondering is, like, oh, did it take him a minute to, like, get the joke, you know? Like, did he just sort of be like, because she hasn't been in a movie in a while, and then it, like, hit him, you know? That's what I don't know.
Maybe.
It's probably being charitable.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard that speculated, and I mean, I guess so, but I mean, like, I think she's done some stuff recently, right? Like, wasn't she just in The Matrix?
Matrix, yeah.
Resurrections, yeah. Yeah, so I've heard some people say it was like that, or like the fact that she would audition for a role or something. I don't know. I mean, I think he was just genuinely laughing at the joke, got the dagger eyes from Jada, kind of had to prove himself, especially because they have this weird relationship right now. Not to get into like celebrity gossip stuff, but like they've been pretty open about like they're in an open relationship, seemingly more because Jada wants that than maybe Will. And I don't know if Will is just not in a good headspace right now, and like he's like kind of not really sure like if he's on solid ground with his marriage, and he kind of feels like because she's like his rock, if like that falls apart, if like, you know, his personal well-being is going to shatter. I don't know. There's a lot of psychological stuff in here that I don't really feel comfortable diving into. But
we're not qualified to delve into that whole stew. But clearly there's something going on that we're not fully privy to, I imagine.
Right. Yeah.
But what grinds me even further is that how in the world did they not remove him from the ceremony after that? They give it like, and I saw a headline that's like, oh, we strongly considered it. Like, don't strongly consider anything. Get him out of there. You assault somebody during your ceremony, you kick them out. Like, there have to be rules.
I guess. I don't feel as strongly about that, only because, like, Chris Rock didn't press charges. Like, he seems to take, like I said, he took it very well. I think he just knows that he's going to get a lot of mileage out of this.
I think that's irrelevant. I don't care if he joked about it afterward.
Sure.
Like, it's still uncool, and it's still a terrible precedent. And,
sure.
like, yeah, I think it's totally separated from Chris Rock's reaction to it. I think, like, you have somebody who gets up on stage, disturbs the ceremony, and attacks the host, you kick them out. They're lucky if they don't get charges pressed against them. I don't care if he's about to win an Oscar for Best Actor. What, dude? Anthony Hopkins didn't get his last year live, so whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, so much about this broadcast was ratings concerned over anything else, to the point where I feel like the show itself, I know you didn't watch it, but
I heard it was
so
pretty
much,
bad.
It was not a good show, and it seemed like
I heard the jokes weren't good. They cut, and like it was still longer than any ceremony since 2018, even though they cut out all of these awards that were like, yeah, it's stupid across the board.
But the ratings, I mean, to their credit, they were better this year than they've been in years before. I think they said like a 51% increase. And I have to assume that's because people heard about this on, you know, Twitter or Instagram, like you said.
Yeah, they had to go see it, you know, be like,
They had to see it. And I have to assume, like, if they, the producers are like, well, if we remove Will Smith from this, we're going to lose viewers. I mean, it's a very cynical way of looking at it, but I'm sure that's probably what was going through.
Yeah, I don't think you're far from the mark there, right? And yeah, it's just... Like, what? Why does this happen so often with the Oscars? You know, between like, it's just like every year there's something almost, and it's like escalating every year. It's kind of
there was a couple years there where it seemed, you know, like the 2020 Parasite won, there was no real issue there, right?
I guess not. I mean, I'd have to think. I mean, let's not forget the year before we had, you know, the infamous Melissa McCarthy's, you know, dress. You know, that thing was
Melissa McCarthy's dress.
That was a headline.
Dress? I don't know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
you remember that thing being the size of like a mansion? I'm being facetious. No. That wasn't an actual story. It was just kind of funny.
I don't know what... I generally... Because like some Oscar controversies are like pegged as controversies, but like they're not really. But like the only ones I can really think of in recent years are obviously like the La La Land, Moonlight, Mix Up, the
envelope
thing there.
Yeah, that was the last big one, sure.
Well, no, I mean, well, that... And then like I said, last year there was a whole thing where like they restructured the show to make it so that Chadwick Boseman... Mm-hmm. would win, and he didn't, and Anthony Hopkins wasn't there and all this stuff. It was, and that one wasn't as quite as social media crazy, but I feel like in retrospect that one's even more absurd than the Moonlight thing. But yeah, I don't know,
like I said, it's just like it's getting more like every year it's like building and building and building. I get it, we had a couple years where it was a little bit quiet. I mean, I think the Green Book win was kind of what in the world. 2017 was quiet. I don't know, but all that to say, it was quite an Oscars. I mean, let's look at the winners here. I mean, I browsed through, and I was happy to see a lot of them. You know, certainly some surprises, a lot of expected wins. I mean, we can just say like the big one, Coda winning Best Picture. I know we speculated it as a decent possibility, right? Like this past week,
I was pretty certain it was going to win.
I mean, I remember we were talking about it, and it's just like it's amazing how it just came from nowhere. Because I think ever since it won at HCA, I think that's when I started to be like, actually, whoa, this actually has a shot. You know, like this could sort of upset the trends. Like, yeah, you know, we don't have the director Sian Cedar, right? She didn't get nominated for Best Director, but she did get nominated for screenplay. And it's like, you know, maybe there is something to this. But Power of the Dog only walked away with one win, from what I can tell.
Yes, for Best
Director. That's insane. Yeah,
which Best Director. Which is not a small win, to be clear.
Of course, yeah. But yeah, everybody else got snuffed. But you know, that's pretty, you know, for what was like a front runner for so many months. It just sort of tells you the Oscars are still pretty unpredictable.
In some respects. I feel like there's really something to be said about their bias against Netflix, because that's the only win.
Right. This is the Netflix first streaming win. Yeah, the first time a streaming service film, you know, like a streaming service original has ever won, and Apple is the one to get it. And Netflix has had years of close calls, right? Yep. You know, like they had The Irishman, they had Marriage Story, The Two Popes, they had Mank, they had Beasts of No Nation, they had Roma. Like they've had at least one strong frontrunner. Some years they have two or three strong frontrunners, and they always lose out. Last year, I know, like it was like a kind of weird thing because it was Nomadland was kind of with Amazon, but it was really kind of Searchlight, right? So this year, though, it's like, it's for real. Like, this is a movie that it premiered at Sundance. So it did premiere in a theater, but it went to a streaming service. And I think Coda has played in theaters as well. But
hey, Cinemaholics people, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I got a fact check here real quick. I just said that Coda premiered in a theater at Sundance. It's not true. Sundance was virtual when Coda premiered. We watched it on our laptops. I'm so sorry. Got it wrong. I said something else wrong. It happens, but it, you know, at least I didn't slap somebody, right? It did play in theaters eventually. They did release it in some theaters, and I think it's going to be re-released in theaters. So, you know, there is that. All right, back to the show.
I mean, it's a pretty crazy win to consider. I certainly was like, whoa, it actually did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not only in like those past years was Netflix now, but like even in other categories where they had other wins predicted, they lost. Like, for instance, Best Animated Short was predicted to go to the Netflix short film Robin. That was an Aardman animation thing. And that went to the Windshield Wiper. And then likewise, in the documentary category, they had like three shorts from Netflix that are up. And I think people predicted it would be Audible because that's another short. That's another film that focuses on the deaf community. And people were like, oh, they're focusing so heavily on the deaf community with Coda that maybe they'll also give it to Audible. But they gave it to the New York Times short film, The Queen of Basketball. And I mean, I was joking with my one coworker during the show that like when Army of the Dead won like movie of the year, which we have, we should talk about that too. Like they, that just,
the Twitter poll award. Ridiculous. Yeah. I kind of love it in a weird way though.
Do you think they intended to do the top five thing, or do you think they only did that because Spider-Man came in number four and it looks like, well, we should probably,
I don't know. I bet they were just sort of hedging their bets, but sure, it's probably a mix of things.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, to what you're saying, the other thing too, like, Encanto got best animated, as a lot of people were speculating it would, but over Mitchell's versus the Machines, which they put so much, you know, effort and marketing, like, muscle into getting that. But yeah, the Oscar, the Academy was just like, that's on Netflix. We don't want, we don't want that. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But like, also, I mean, there is something to say about how the industry doesn't like Netflix. You know, a lot of people chalk it up to like, oh, it's because it's a streaming service. And this kind of proves that, that's not really all of it, is it? I mean, Netflix is not just a streaming service. It's a media company. And they've been kind of pushing their weight around a little bit with the industry. Not to say Netflix has done something egregiously wrong in that respect. I mean, it's done plenty of things wrong, but I think that they're not a villain or a hero in this situation. But I do think there is like a sort of a feud, a blood battle between them and the theater going experience. And it's interesting to see them not have that same consternation toward Apple. I'm curious like what that is. Mm-hmm. I guess because Apple's still such like an underdog by comparison, it doesn't nearly have the same amount of subscribers.
Yeah, I mean, I think Apple was smart about it because if they were looking to make this a awards contender from the get-go, like they gave it a fairly quiet release in theaters over this past summer when they acquired it from Sundance a year prior. But yeah, I mean, like they, you know, really pushed the marketing, you know, in time account, like leading up to like the final voting days, they were like really adamant about Coda, like pushing it in all these different ways. But I think they weren't doing so in a way it's like, oh, this is like content on our service. Like they were really championing, like this is a movie that really showcases the deaf community in a major, meaningful way and all this stuff. And I feel like with Netflix, there's this, even though they keep trying to prove themselves like, oh, look, we're celebrating important filmmakers, or we're giving these auteur filmmakers a chance to make these important works, they still parade themselves they're making content over features. And I think that's where the stigma is coming in, where, you know, people in the Academy still look at it and it's just like, yeah, but you're still making content at heart. Like you're not making motion pictures, you're not making films. And I think that's where the difference is. I don't know for sure. Like I haven't talked to the Academy or anything like that.
That's a good theory though. I mean, I do think that, you know, it's probably a mix of that. And it's a mix of like Netflix is seen as like a TV channel when like their movies are like TV movies that occasionally you have like the big hits that should be in theaters. Whereas, you know, and I honestly can't really talk about Apple for obvious reasons, full disclosure. You know, I work for Apple. I don't work for TV Plus or anything like that. I didn't work on Coda. I don't have any connection to it. But I'm not going to speculate anyway, just because I just want to avoid all that tricky stuff. But I do think, you know, very lightly to say there is something to how different their models are. And I think people should pay close attention to how streaming services in general are going to be moving forward. Like we recently saw aren't there like two streaming services that are merging pretty soon? Discovery and what was it? Paramount Plus?
Is that true? I did not hear about this.
Yeah, let me double check that I have the right streaming. I know it's Discovery Plus and another streaming service are going to be merging. And I think, you know, we've been predicting this for years. Like this is inevitable just because.
Sure.
It's going to be HBO Max and Discovery Plus are going to be combined.
Okay.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense because like the bundles are the future, right? You can't have so many of these things. It's not viable.
Well, I mean, they're just following cable then, right? Because like there's a whole thing with cable bundles where it's like you get
that's one way to look
channels,
at it, right?
Right.
But I think I would pay attention though to, I mean, the way that Apple's doing it, but then the way that Netflix is trying to introduce games now. Netflix is trying to become more than like just you know, streaming content, they're trying to, well, you can stream games too, but I think they're trying to be like a bigger media company, something that has a diversification of entertainment and things that it sells. Because if it's just a streaming service, it's just that easy to drop it, right? So I don't know. All that to say, back to the Oscar stuff. I do think that it was an interesting year in terms of who won, but I think there were some boring wins here too. Like I was happy to see like some of the ones that I was happy to see were I like Jessica Chastain and Eyes of Tammy Faye, or her winning Best Actress. I was like, oh, that's nice. I know you weren't the biggest fan of that.
Yeah, I would have preferred if Penelope Cruz won, I think, or even Kristen Stewart. I think that would have been a more
Kristen Stewart would have been the right choice. Yeah. But, you know, I still think it was a good performance, and I'm happy for Jessica Chastain because I think she's tremendous. And I mean, a lot of those actresses are really great. So it was not a bad scenario.
Yeah. I'm just worried I'm just worried that she's going to take the wrong lessons from this win and do big showier performance, where I think those are not her best work. I think she does better when she's kind of doing smaller, more character focus.
Did Netflix get anything? Because Don't Look Up got anything, right?
Well, that's what I was saying, was that Power of the Dog winning Best Director was literally was the only win for
Netflix. Lost Daughter didn't get anything?
Nope.
Wow.
And I think, honestly, the reason I think that Power of the Dog won Best Director was, I mean, I don't know why it didn't beat Paul Thomas Anderson, but I mean, just looking at I'm sure a lot of people loved Spielberg, but he's won however many times before. I don't really know how the Academy felt about Drive My Car, to be honest. Like I'm hoping they liked it because they gave it Best International Feature. But you know, I don't know if they were wowed enough to give it Best Director. But, you know, Jane Campion has proven herself however many times at this point. Like, I think she is well respected in the industry, and everyone was just like, yeah, like she, you know, has been doing great work constantly. And I mean, obviously, Coda wasn't nominated in that category. Neither was Dune, which Dune was cleaning up throughout the night. Clearly, like you as predicted, won all these technical awards, even though most of those were before the broadcast or taped before the broadcast. The fact that those two movies were not eligible for Best Director, I think, really helped Jane Campion out as far as her winning this award.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I just looked up because I was curious, Spielberg's been nominated a lot. He's been nominated 19 times for across Best Director, Best Picture and stuff. He only has 3 wins. And I think only one of those is Best Director. So Schindler's List, he won for. Oh, no, he's won twice. So Schindler's List, he won Best Director, and Saving Private Ryan, he's won Best Director. So this would have been his third. That's still the Academy's he's won before. It was a very competitive year in a lot of these categories. You know, I was happy to see Drive My Car won Best International. Ariana DeBose, I think we predicted was going to get Best Supporting. Troy Kotsur for Best Supporting as well.
Yeah, he had a great speech.
I had a chance to watch the speech, and I thought it was really moving.
Yeah, that was probably the best speech. Though the most captivating was probably Will Smith one, just for the absurdity of it. I think in terms of best speech.
I was bummed that Dos Oruguitas didn't win Best Original Song, but No Time to Die was a great song as well. So I was happy to see that Billie Eilish on her way.
I was happy about that. Yeah, no, I was happy about that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I saw that Belfast won Best Original Screenplay. So I'm sure that wrinkled your feathers.
No, that was embarrassing. Yeah. Over PTA and Worst Person in the World. I was just happy it wasn't Don't Look Up. But I mean, man.
Sure, sure.
What an embarrassment, yeah.
And then Dune swept the technicals. So, you know, almost all of them. I mean, it didn't win costume or makeup or anything like those two. But everything else, it cleaned up, which I think was expected, right? So all in all, it was definitely an interesting night. I'm certainly, you know, I think I'm still processing it because I just can't believe.
Well, yeah.
Any of this, who punches? You didn't even watch slaps?
It. Yeah, I mean, you didn't even watch it, so it's probably even more surreal for you, because you're seeing this all through clips and, you know, after the fact,
right?
Whereas, you know, watching it during the broadcast was just in the moment. It was, yeah, I mean, I I mean, I don't think Coda should have won Best Picture, but I do kind of feel bad for everything that won after that, because literally everyone was just thinking about that slap. And it's just like, it kind of just undermined, you know, like I think Questlove, you know, well-deserved win for Summer of Soul, and I thought he gave a very lovely speech as well, and I felt bad that, like, his moment was being overshadowed by this, you know, weird, violent altercation that just happened moments before. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think things played out mostly as I expected outside, like, as far as like the wins themselves, not obviously the broadcast, but I mean, I think the wins themselves played out mostly as I anticipated. Like I said, a little bit more Dune heavy than I think I initially anticipated, but you were obviously expecting that. And I knew it was going to win a lot of technicals, but I didn't expect it to win like editing and things like that. So, I mean, the fact that Power of the Dog got shut out was fairly surprising, but not necessarily shocking at the same time.
I mean, I was sad to see that Flea got shut out. You know, it was in so many categories. I think it was like the first film ever, right, to be nominated for Best Animated, Best Documentary, and Best International. That's the first. And right. there were some movies here that didn't really win anything. Like Licorice Pizza didn't get anything, huh? And it's like,
nope.
Dang, that's pretty sad. You know, it's like one of the best movies of the year. Like easily a level above everything else that was nominated for Best Picture, at least in, I guess, our opinion. But yeah, but other stuff did get awards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how it goes with the Oscars. I guess I didn't miss much, but I also missed quite a bit at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like the broadcast itself was just really a mess, to be honest. Like, it's so clear that the Academy or the people involved with it from a production standpoint were so openly trying to favor sensationalism and not really caring about film itself, just trying to create a lot of viral moments. And ironically, the one viral moment they created was completely out of their control. I don't know. I like Amy Schumer. I like Wanda Sykes. I like Regina Hall. But as hosts, they'd had no real chemistry together. It was pretty apparent that they wanted, I think, the only murder in the building trio, Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez to be the host. But they asked them like way late in the game. Like, they just couldn't schedule it to make it work. So they kind of scrambled and found three people who would say yes. And it was pretty obvious because like they just like didn't really have like a lot of correlation with their bits. It just kind of seemed like they're all trying to do something different.
At this point, just do we need a host? I feel like it's been fine the years that they didn't have a host.
No, I think they need a host to give the show an identity, but you need someone who's like they keep trying to like double up or triple up with people, and that's how you get like the Anne Hathaway and James Franco thing, where it's like I think if it was just Anne Hathaway hosting it, like she had a lot of like theater.
They
kid
didn't have
energy
faith
for
in
it,
her.
But,
yeah,
I mean, well, yeah, it seemed like it, but if it was just her, it would have been fine, but they threw in James Franco, who was just dead weight, and I think that's why people are so critical of that hosting duty. But, you know, like, I just don't get, like, why don't they just get Hugh Jackman back? Like, he did a fine job however many years ago he did it, and now there's not like any, what was it?
Yeah, there are a few people who've done a great job, you know, and they just never bring him back for some reason. It's like, oh, but if they're Billy Crystal, they can do it, like, 20, 30 times.
Yeah,
that's strange.
Billy Crystal. I like Billy Crystal fine. I think there's an old showman.
I do too. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like he got to do it so many times. And then I don't know. It's just like, how come nobody else, they don't bring anybody else back? Imagine if Cinemaholics, we were like, sorry, Corey, we know you've done a great job. You've been on Cinemaholics however many times. But, you know, now we're going to have Wanda Sykes. Like, you'd be crushed.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, I'm sure, comes down to scheduling and all these different things. And it's a thankless job, to be fair. And a lot of it, I mean, like I said,
I mean,
like,
it's a lot of prestige, but.
Yeah. And also, like, there are people who want to do it, but then, like, you have to, like, go through, like Kevin Hart, like, he wanted to do it, but he had the controversy and he wouldn't, you know, really apologize for it and stuff like that. And I think that's the reason why there was a host for a long time, because a lot of people were afraid, like, oh, if I'm going to try the host, people are going to try to dig up all these old jokes I did. And, like, it's even worth that for my, you know, reputation to have to dig through.
I don't think Chris Rock's going to be hosting again. I'm looking at the image now, well, you're going to hate me for this, but Will Smith has got good form. Like, that's a really good, like, he brought the hand, like, good angle.
It was a good slap. I mean,
very photogenic slap. So I can at least give him that. You know, I'm horrified and I do not approve of it whatsoever, but I do approve of that form. You know, he's got to use it for good. Use it against people who deserve it.
Sure. I don't know. I would be shocked if they don't do something, whether it's like a Super Bowl ad where they like acknowledge it, where they're together and they have to fight about, you know,
are they just gonna be like, we don't condone violence, we just tolerate violence when it happens, thus condoning it.
Or they'll have a, right? they'll come back for, like, they'll present Best Actor together or something next year. Like, instead of it just being Will Smith, there'll be Will Smith and Chris Rock. They're going to do something where they come back together and they're going to, like, kind of jokingly acknowledge it and they're going to hug or something.
It's going to be so lame. I just don't understand how they think people are so dumb. Like, how in the world can you actively, you condone violence. You let it happen. And you don't do anything about it, and there are no consequences, and then you have the gall to say the next day, "Oh, we don't condone violence of any kind." Like, yes, you do, you liars. Like, it's very, very just.
I think
you
take more offense to it than I do, because like
you love a bloodbath. You're a big WWE
fan. No, it's not that
fan.
I love a bloodbath. It's just that no one seriously got hurt from this, as far as I know.
Like,
are
you
though?
Right? Like, I don't want to like overstate it, but I do think like for Chris Rock, that's. I don't know. Like, I could imagine that being traumatizing. Like, we don't know, but like,
maybe. But
can you imagine like that happening to you? Like,
I mean, unless
he
says otherwise. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't pressed charges. He hasn't said anything like against it. He took it pretty well. I mean, if he says otherwise, I'll change my tune. But for
that's the thing. I don't think he has to say anything, because like how he deals with it is how he deals with it. But I'm just saying, like, I think an act like that, like doing something like that to somebody else, it can shake a person, you know, deep down. Like, even if they don't show it, even if they say it's okay, I don't think that's relevant. Sometimes you bury that stuff for your own. There are incentives to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's what's got me going. So I'll call Chris up after this recording. I'll make sure he's okay. Check in.
I mean, I think it could have got a lot worse. Like, Chris, he clearly held himself back from like saying any more jokes. He, you know, he didn't like fall down and like, you know, like start bleeding or anything like that.
Yeah, he didn't do a soccer move, you know.
Sure. I don't know. I mean, for the time being, like I said, we're recording this the day after it happened. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? Maybe he'll say like, oh, this was actually, like you said, like a really traumatizing incident for me and all this stuff. But for the time being, I think he's just going to get a lot of mileage out of this. And I mean, I'm more curious to see what's going to happen with Will Smith's career after this. I think Chris Rock's going to be totally fine. But I mean, you know, like I said, that's maybe he won't be. I don't know. But I think for now, he's probably
Chris Rock's career will be fine. But yeah, I'm just worried about the guy on a personal level. Not that I know him. But with Will Smith, I'm just kind of like, man, you need to take so many steps back and keep your whatever is going on with you and your wife. Keep that away from other people. You know, especially like, you know, I'm just saying, like, there's some red flags here that I'm a little concerned about. But like we said earlier, we don't have to pry further on that. That's their business.
Sure.
Well, that's the Oscars. I guess we can move into our actual review this week, because we have a big one to talk about. A movie that opened this weekend called The Lost City. Now, listeners of the show who've been around the block, they've been listening to us for a while. They're like, John, well, you already reviewed a movie called The Lost City, didn't you? And in 2017, I remember it starred Charlie Hunnam. It starred Robert Pattinson and Tom Holland. It was a great review. You and Will did a great job. Well,
I wasn't there for that one. That was my first
Maverick
one I missed.
Was.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I was about to say that listener is mistaken. They forgot who hosted it, and they forgot the name of the movie. It wasn't The Lost City. It was The Lost City of Z. You know, as we say The Lost City of Z, but I think overseas they say The Lost City of Zed.
Zed,
they pronounce it differently, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I am embarrassed to say I still haven't seen that film, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it's not one of those movies where I'm just like, Will, what are you doing? You're letting everybody down. Like, you know, it's a nice enough film. It's not a landmark film.
Oh no, I've heard it's really good.
I
heard, I love that Ad Astra, the film James Gray made afterwards. I'm really excited for Armageddon Time. But for some reason, I didn't get to, I think it was because I missed it in theaters, because I wasn't there for the review for whatever reason. But
I vaguely remember. I think you were on a road trip for It Ain't Ogre Till It's Ogre.
Remember that? Yeah, I was visiting my college hometown with Matt, and we recorded on the... I guess I was that weekend, yeah.
I think so.
That was a lovely trip, but I do miss the chance.
Wouldn't trade it for anything.
But I do miss the chance of having seen Lost City of Z in theaters. But, you know, we got to live with the choices we make.
Well, it's kind of funny because I don't remember Lost City of Z having a lot of, like, pop culture, you know, awareness. Like, oh, yeah, people know what that is. People know that movie. People saw it. I think people, like, some people are aware of it. But, like, you can ask, you know, 100 people on the street, maybe one person will know what that movie is. Like, that's my guess. So it's kind of interesting that this movie kind of jokes with, or it's sort of a joke on the title of it, because you know, as you're watching it, they have like a pun where this movie stars Sandra Bullock as a romance novelist. She's really an archaeologist, historical person, but she uses her romance adventure novels to sort of like get that content across. Like she dresses up like her actual passion, which is history. And she writes a book or publishes a book called The Lost City of D. Obviously, like she says, it's like, oh, D stands for, you know, this like lost art or whatever. But everyone's like, no, it stands for, you know what, right? Because it's a romance novel with lots of sex. There's a character named Dash. There are a lot of things that D is doing. Well, Ashton, wouldn't you agree? But I think one of the things you said to me when you watched this is like, you wish that they had kept the title, The Lost City of D.
Oh. For this. Yes, they should have. Yeah,
I disagree.
Why do you disagree?
I disagree because it's from a marketing standpoint. Yes, it would have been fun, but I think people would have gotten the wrong impression of this movie, wouldn't they? They'd see like if you see a movie called The Lost City of D, you're either going to think that it's smut, so it's just going to be like, oh, this is going to be like super steamy. There's going to be a lot of nudity. There's going to be a lot of sex scenes and stuff like that. Eh. Or you're going to think that it's a full on parody, right? You're going to think it's like, oh, this is satirizing adventure movies, like in a very like over the top way, like Scary Movie, like that kind of thing. So I think they made the right call here, actually, because I don't think that title would have worked.
I got to disagree because I think Lost City on its own is just a horribly generic title.
And I think it's
okay. If you put Lost City of D, then it's much more memorable.
It's memorable, but again, I think that people would not have watched it. I mean, even fewer. I mean, it actually had a decent opening weekend.
Yeah,
I actually want to say. So
say, yeah.
I'm the one who wins this round of
no. I was going to say, you put
so
Sandra
you think
Bullock.
It would have doubled its money.
Yeah, if you put Chang Tatum in a movie called The Lost City of D, you think people aren't going to show up to see that?
I think a lot of people wouldn't. I think a lot of people would be like, I would never.
Do you see how many people showed up to see Magic Mike?
I think that's different. I think Magic Mike had a stronger marketing campaign, and I think that was something.
It's a better movie too.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this Lost City. Our debate about the title aside, like I said before, it's a romantic action adventure comedy. This is one of my favorite genres of films. It's that kind of film. It's got the swashbuckling, like we're going to the jungle, you know, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, even stuff that's not quite the jungle, but close enough, right? So I'm thinking of movies like The Princess Bride and Romancing the Stone, like just these over the top adventurous movies. I love that stuff. I'll even give a pass to a movie like Jungle Cruise because it has like that kind of flair, you know, as flawed as that movie is, I got plenty out of it.
Yeah. A movie that can be described as swashbuckling.
I do. That's the word. It's like, is this swashbuckling enough? Do I need to buckle up swashly for this movie? And that's how I process it. But
I mean,
this is,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is directed by the Nee brothers. So Adam and Aaron Nee. Were you familiar with this filmmaking duo before? I had never seen their other films.
I heard about Band of Robbers. That's the previous film they made, right?
Yeah, that's a 2015 film. Yeah, they've also done some TV stuff.
Are they New Zealand based? Are they Australian?
I thought they were American, but I would not.
Okay.
You know, I don't know them well enough to be like, well, you know, for sure. I know they were supposed to be doing a Masters of the Universe movie.
Yeah. I mean, I know Band of Robbers kind of got a comparison. It got good comparisons to Hunt for the Wilder People, I think. It had kind of like that vibe. So I thought they were also Australian, but you might be right. I think the one thing I remember, they did a Run the Jewels music video that I remember being pretty good, if I recall correctly.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun stuff. But yeah, this is their first like major project. And they kind of have, with this movie, I mentioned Sandra Bullock is in it, right? We also have Oscar Nunez. So it's a little bit of a reunion of The Proposal. I don't know if you watched The Proposal and or liked it.
Yeah, because... this was going to be a reunion, right?
That's what I just said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of got the same spirit of that film. We don't have Ryan Reynolds as the love interest, but we do have Channing Tatum. And it's another kind of thing where like Sandra Bullock, she produces movies where she's just like, you know what? I'm going to, you know, my love interest is going to be a younger man and I am here for it. I love that she has that power. I don't know if we've seen her really in a film in a while, right? Like, I know we had The Unforgivable last year, but I didn't watch that. And then I think before that was Bird Box, right?
Right. Yeah, it's been a while since she's been in a theatrical film. I think the last one she did in theaters was Ocean's 8.
Ocean's 8, yeah. Same year as Bird Box, technically, but certainly not. Yeah, because she did Ocean's 8. She also did Our Brand is Crisis a few years before that. She kept having like big gaps. Her last movie I remember that was like a big movie, like a movie that was, you know, had a lot of buzz, that like a lot of people saw, that was not Bird Box, I guess, like not a streaming thing, was Gravity, which is almost a decade ago, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and I'm not counting Minions because like she was just a voice actor in that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the same year as The Heat, which I mean, I think she's great in Gravity. I think The Heat is kind of a terrible film, but you know, I think people really just like Sandra Bullock.
Can you say it?
Yeah, people really like Sandra Bullock, which is understandable. I do too. Yeah, I mean, yeah. She's a good actress. She makes a lot of rom-coms.
She's wonderful. You know, she's great. She's great in I almost said rom-coms. You got me doing it. I think, you know, when The Proposal came out, and I thought people were kind of down on that movie at first. Like people were sort of just like, this is terrible. This is not a good movie. I remember really liking it. And I remember being like, you know what? This is what the people like. You know, this is something that's going to scratch an itch for people. And I remember watching it with friends. I remember I had lots of people see it, like still watch it to this day. And it's a very watchable, nice movie. And I think she's one of the big reasons why. So I don't know. I think Sandra Bullock, not an underrated actor or anything like that. She's certainly got plenty of praise and people love her, but an actor that I wish was doing more things more regularly, but I like that she's producing here because I think she has a good eye for like cinematic risk taking. This is not the kind of movie you would typically see, right, in theaters. This is not the kind of movie that a studio like Paramount would have the courage to put the money into. But you know, it's funny because I watched this with my partner, and she had actually like read an article about this, and so she told me, she's like, actually it looks like Sandra Bullock was the one who championed this movie and convinced the studio to give it a real budget and to actually go for it, like this premise. And I think it worked out. This is a very fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a throwback to the sort of rom-coms that we used to get more frequently, like on a monthly or like bi-weekly basis, I feel like, but from the studio system. But yeah, now, I mean, it's obviously trying to be in the vein of like Romancing the Stone, the Robert Zemeckis movie with Michael Douglas and who was the female lead in that film? It's been a while since I've seen it.
Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, Kathleen Turner. That's right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely trying to be like, you know, not just solely a rom-com of yore, but kind of like you said, like kind of like a mix of genres, having kind of an adventure feel to it. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, it feels like it's a blockbuster rom-com, which is something we haven't really gotten, especially in the Netflix age where a lot of these type of rom-coms just get a quiet streaming release. And then, you know, if they find an audience like the one with... what was the one that came out in 2018 with Pete Davidson was like a co-star in it?
Romantic comedy?
Yeah, Zoe Deutsch was the lead of it. The guy from Everybody Wants Some was in it. It was Set It Up.
That is not a movie I usually think of with Pete Davidson in it.
Well, I remember he was like...
Did he have like a cameo?
In the thumbnail. I don't know. I didn't see the movie, but he was in the thumbnail. I remember Set It Up.
That was a fun movie.
But that was like the last like rom-com I feel like that kind of found some cultural cachet.
Sure.
As well as the
To All the Boys,
Always Be My Maybe. Before. Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. That one.
Well, lately Netflix has been sort of like the breeding ground for new romantic comedy IP and performances and things like that, because I think the Hallmark Channel has been sort of instrumental in the holiday rom-com kind of making a huge comeback over the last decade. And just being something that like people turn to as comfort food, as like a TV movie with like a low budget and everything like that. But, you know, we don't usually get these, like you're saying, like this big budget extravaganza of a romantic film, romantic comedy film like Romancing the Stone. So I'll set it up here. Very similar to the premise of the Romancing the Stone, where the main character is a romance novelist who, kind of struggling on her next book. Her name is Loretta Sage. And she actually has like a bit of a, you know, bit of a sour relationship with the cover model of her books named Dash McMahon in the book, but in real life, a man named Alan Caperson, played by Channing Tatum. And he thinks she's great. He loves being a cover model, and he seems to have like a little bit of a crush on her, but she is grieving the death of her husband. And she's just having a hard time writing these books. She feels like these books are schlock. She calls her book schlock at one point. She's very grumpy about her life in this moment. She doesn't want to be writing these books. She wants to kind of finish the research that she did in searching for this lost city that she and her husband had worked so hard on. And then she kind of gets whisked onto this adventure by an egomaniac played by Daniel Radcliffe, who's kind of, he's sort of supposed to be like, I guess, one of the Murdoch kids, or like Murdoch, one of the Koch brothers, take your pick, just kind of like this super messed up billionaire heir who is trying to prove something. He thinks that she has, because of her book, the key to finding this lost treasure on this island in the Atlantic. So he kidnaps her. And then we have Channing Tatum, who goes on an adventure to try to save her from this like group of mercenaries. So very, very soon after, we watched a movie like Uncharted, which kind of has similar vibes to this, but this is a more out and out comedy. It's definitely, despite its budget, it's not a flashy movie or anything. Like, the effects aren't great, but it kind of fits that, right? Because it's not supposed to be like an action movie with like amazing special effects that they're not sort of hyping any of that. It's just kind of like pure fun. It's just sort of like, let's go to the movies and escape into this adventure romance for a couple hours. You're going to go home. You're going to have a good time. I certainly had a good time. I watched this with my partner, and we both had a really good time with the movie. It was really just a very amusing film. But what did you think, Will? Did you like this one?
I thought it was very okay.
That's how I describe you usually at parties. Sure. Yeah, that's Will. I mean, he's very okay.
Yeah,
being the best.
Sure. I think it does exactly what's on the tin. You get what you're going to expect from this film. Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum play off each other pretty well. I think Channing Tatum in particular holds himself pretty well. I think it's bizarre to imagine Ryan Reynolds in this role, because it feels very well catered to Channing Tatum. And I think it's a lot of fun seeing him in movie star mode again, because, you know, outside of,
I agree, directing, I don't think it would have been anywhere near as good with Ryan Reynolds. I'm gonna say that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, nothing against Ryan Reynolds. I've, you know, spoken out against him enough. I do generally like him. I just think he's now kind of in this weird snarky mode where he wouldn't allow himself to kind of play dumb like this in the way that Channing Tatum seems pretty willing to do at this point in his career, especially, like I said, coming off of a lull in his, you know, you were talking about Sandra Bullock having kind of a lull from being in theaters, but, you know, Channing Tatum just came back only like a month or so ago with Dog, his directorial debut.
I know you and Charlie talked about that on that episode, and so I didn't want to belabor it, but yeah, it's true.
But, you know, but yeah, I mean, like before that, I mean, he hadn't really been in a movie, in live action at least, since Logan Lucky,
and it was just taking a bit of a break, you know, his
Yeah, I mean, I think seeing him again on the big screen was probably the most enjoyable thing about this movie. I also really like the supporting cast. Daniel Radcliffe, you know, he gets to play his like Bond villain role.
He's having a good time.
Because, you know, like Daniel Radcliffe is at a point, especially with the Harry Potter movies and the, you know, the millions upon millions of dollars that he's got at this point. He's not going to just do something because he needs a paycheck. Like, he wants to have fun with the role. And I think it's going to cheer it. Yeah, and Patty Harrison gets a pretty standout supporting role in this. I like that.
Always lovely to see her.
Yeah, Divine Randolph also gets a pretty notable supporting role. I think
she's funnier in the first part of the movie, but like once the second half of the movie, there was something about the jokes where it's like, these need to be punched up because she's delivering them well, but the jokes themselves aren't very good. What was up with that?
I'm glad you brought up punch up, because I think that kind of gets into my main issue with the film, which is that I feel like the comedy in this, especially because they're touting it as a comedy, rarely ever feels organic. This movie is so by numbers and its structure and format that I feel like there's no real like organic sense of flow to it. And it's not that it moves badly, like it moves fine, but it just doesn't feel ever really organic. I feel like that kind of comes down to the adventure aspects. Because I know they shot some of this in like the actual they shoot in Venezuela.
It looks like I think I have it right here. They shot it in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, they shot this in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, it was an island. Yeah. Venezuela is not.
But there's so much of this that, you know, clearly like they like shot this in studio, or like they shot it on a green screen. It just kind of felt like, okay, this is the Dominican Republic. This is the studio. Now this is a green screen. Now we're back in the Dominican Republic. I never really felt The adventure aspect of it felt underwhelming to me in a way that I feel like Romancing a Stone, it feels a lot more organic because they actually shot that in the jungle. And it felt like there's a lot more genuine conflict there with their would-be romance. And with this, it just kind of felt like, okay, we're establishing the characters. Now we're establishing the conflict. Now we are in our secondary location. Now we get the star cameo, but he's not going to be here for long because we need the two stars to be together. And they're not going to get along, but oh, maybe you can't really judge a book by its cover. And I was hoping it would be more subversive in that respect because like it is so adamantly like going against that like idea of like you can't, life isn't a romance novel and all this stuff, but it is playing out exactly as people expect. So it's like, what are we really doing here?
Well, you know what, well, Ashton, I will say this much. This movie did sort of anger me, but also impress me at the same time. When you mentioned it right there, like, you know, like I like to write like little pithy letterbox reviews for the movies that I watch. It's a pastime of mine. And, you know, I did that for The Lost City. I sat down and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to like, I think I was like 30 minutes into this movie. I was like, oh, yeah, my letterbox review is going to be don't judge a book by its cover model. And I was so proud of myself. I was like, that's a good one. That's going to get the people laughing. And then the movie has the audacity, the sadistic, sick audacity, the gall to just say that line out loud, literally just right there halfway through the film. Sandra Bullock utters that, and you know what, that's when I was like, this movie has outsmarted me, it's bested me, therefore I'm gonna have to say it's the best movie of 2022, just on those grounds. I think this is a very, very fun movie. I mean, I get what you're saying. It's certainly not a movie that I want to hype up too much. I don't want people to go into this being like, man, this is going to be a laugh a minute. It's not. It does fall short in as a comedy in quite a few places. Like there, it's weird. Like there are times when the jokes really work, but none of them are like gut busting funny. And then a lot of the time they're not even like regularly funny. So I'll go there. I think that Oscar Nunez in this, like, I think he's funny in The Proposal, right? He's funny in The Office. In this movie, he's not very funny. Like, I don't know. There was just something kind of weird. Like the whole section of the film with him and Divine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I actually thought he was one of the better aspects of this film.
Really?
Like, I thought it was kind of picking up when he came into the foil. So, yeah.
I'll have to disagree. My favorite thing about this movie is a sequence involving Channing Tatum and a cameo that I'm not going to give away because it's very fun. I mean, I think it's easy.
It's in the trailer.
It's in the trailer, and it's also on the poster, I guess. But
yeah, you can say it if you
just
want.
Just in case.
Whatever. I get not spoiling, but you can say it at the same time.
Fine. Okay, I'll say it. You know, just Brad Pitt shows up in this movie, and he gets to have like this really fun sequence, and I'm just, that was fun. That was probably the peak of the movie for me. It was just like this sort of escape attempt and like all this stuff going on with him as like this Navy SEAL who I guess is also in the CIA. It was like, that was a little unclear to me, but like him and Channing Tatum, like I think to what you're saying about how the movie moves, I think one of the reasons the movie works on an emotional level for me is that the central joke is that Channing Tatum looks gorgeous. He looks like he's got big muscles, but he's also sort of, you know,
calm down.
I'll stop sweating, but no, he's also like not a fighter. He's not like this. He's not the adventurer from the book. Like he's not the sort of like genius, you know, he can stop anybody kind of guy. But in that respect, I think that like this movie's about his journey of like how he wants to be, you know, at least close to that. He wants to be a hero. And like watching him go on that journey is, I think, very entertaining. And it's a fun central premise, I think. Now, in terms of in terms of like Sandra Bullock, I think there's some weaker motivations there of like why she's doing what she's doing. And I don't know. I think the romance works and everything, but there are aspects to her character and her motivations that I thought like the movie sort of forgot about from time to time. So certainly you can nitpick the movie for all that stuff, but I think it's all perfectly acceptable if you're in the mood for a swashbuckling good time. So yeah, use the word again.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not one like I'm going to, you know, be adamantly negative on because I think it serves its purpose. And I think most people who are in the target audience for this film are going to like it. I was just kind of hoping it was something more than it was. But I think people are really responding to the fact that it is just an old-fashioned sort of rom-com with a little bit more stakes, a little bit more of a budget behind it. That's fine. Like, I'm not going to take that away from anybody, and that's cool.
Please don't. Yeah, I want to keep it.
But yeah, I feel like maybe my expectations were slightly a little too high for this. I feel like people were hyping it up to be a little bit more than it was. And I think if I had expected to be sort of more mediocre and I saw it as like, oh, it's actually, it was fine, it was all right, I would have been more receptive to it. But I think people were hyping it up. It's like, oh, this is actually like a standout for the genre. And I think as is just kind of like a fine throwback to when movies like this were more frequently found in theaters. And so, you know, I think people kind of like that. It reminds them of movies of the past, like you said, like The Proposal and Romancing the Stone. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of wish it had a little bit more going for it. But I think Channing Tatum really holds his own. And, you know, Sandra Bullock does what is expected for her in the standout. Or the supporting cast, I think, stands out, especially, like you said, Brad Pitt, who, you know, I saw someone pointing out, a lot of people point this out, that, like, he's, like, a character actor in a, you know, handsome body. And I think there's some truth to that. But I feel like, especially, like, with this and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, what I find really interesting about this stage of Brad Pitt's career is that he seems to be almost sort of like weaponizing his good looks, like using it to be sort of disarming in a weird way. Like in this movie, like he's like, he is like, you know, like obviously like what Sandra Bullock's character is trying to personify in that respect. But like, she's like so cut off by his good looks that like, you know, like the mission sort of fails for that reason. And I think that's like more amusing. And then, you know, like there's a lot of stuff done with that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But I think that to me is a little bit more interesting as far as like people just being like, oh, like he's just too handsome for his own good. Like, I think he actually uses his handsomeness in some interesting ways. And I agree too, with you that, yeah. I think in this movie, he was probably the standout of it. And when he is out of the film, kind of like, yeah, you know, is there a way to bring him back? Is there a way to get him back in the movie?
You know what? And this is a success for Paramount right when they need it. You know, this is their second biggest opening film since during the COVID pandemic. It's right next to A Quiet Place Part 2. And
this is bigger
that's great to see.
Bigger than Jackass Forever?
It is. And
oh, okay.
I mean, it grossed about, looks like $34 million in its opening weekend. That's what's reported as of today when we're recording this. Now, I do want to play the Rotten Tomatoes game, but here's the issue, Ashen.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes is down right now.
Oh, yeah?
I know. Yeah, it's down. It's been acting up all morning, and so I've kind of had a feeling this is going to happen. Fortunately, there is a reported RT score that we can work off of. We don't have the audience score, but we do have the average rating at least, and we have the cinema score. So we're going to run through it.
It looks like Rotten Tomatoes is up for me.
It's up for you because I've been trying to access it.
You want to do it backwards this time? Do you want to guess the Rotten Tomatoes score?
I don't know if that would be okay though, because I'm looking at the reported, which I don't know if it's still accurate. It could still be accurate. So I've already seen.
Actually, you know what? You are right. It does look like I wasn't scrolling down because I didn't want to see the score, but it does look like it's just like an ad and then like some random things. Oh, maybe it is down.
Right. Like you can access the site, but like you can't see anything on it at the moment.
Yeah. That's
and literally
what I'm seeing, yeah.
If you go to the Lost City like page, it says that there's no score. So we can just go off of the critical response. Maybe next time, Will, you'll get to get me on the spot.
Oh,
and that'll be a day indeed.
Yeah. I forgot to mention, two things I wanted to say before we jump into Rotten Tomatoes game. One, I misspoke. I was thinking of the film Get Duped from a few years ago, and that was, I think, from a New Zealand filmmaker. They did the Out of Sight music video. I was getting Get Duped and Band of Robbers mixed up, so that was my fault. I apologize. I misspoke.
No problem.
There.
Got that cleared right up.
Two, can I just talk about how weird the soundtrack for this movie is?
Is it that weird?
Yeah, because like you introduce Brad Pitt with like the Hanson Family song, like the theme song, The True Detective, and then you play like Nick Cave's Red Right Hand, like the Scream theme song, while he's like murdering
people.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. I thought it was really weird.
I thought it was
like other songs. I don't know. I thought they just picked some really random choices. Like I thought the soundtrack guy was just like kind of picking at random on a shuffle.
He just had like his own iPod. Yeah. He was just like, right. What did I listen to this morning on the way to work? That was fair enough, I guess. It didn't bother me too much, but I get what you're saying. But I thought that that music actually like fit the mood. I guess like for a lot of people who don't know that context, they'll just be like, music. I think the music was done by Pinar Toprak, I'm seeing, who has done Captain Marvel and Lightkeepers.
Is that who did the score?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember
the
score too well. Yeah, I was going to say. I don't remember the score too well, so I guess it's not too much of a compliment or criticism. But
I don't know. I don't know. But all right. Let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game, or we'll try to. It won't be as it won't be as like in real time as we usually do. We usually look at the live score when we record, but no, we're going to look at what it was reported on when it had 143 reviews counted. I'm sure it's higher than that at this point. But yeah, Will Ashton, what do you think the critic score is for Velocity?
I'm going to go with 84%.
You are off just by 8 points there. It is 76%. It's a little bit lower. Huh. Okay. Which, yeah, I don't remember it being in the 80s when I first saw the reviews coming in. It might have been that high at some point. Were you thinking that like critics were, because you know you saw that first wave was pretty positive?
Yeah, I just remember like South by Southwest people were really responding to this film.
They were able to, hey, that's the hype, you know, you're in Austin, Texas, you're eating good barbecue, it's easy to grade a movie that way, huh?
Yeah, getting COVID.
Yeah, okay. What do you think the average rating for it is on Rotten Tomatoes? I don't have the audience score, unfortunately, but we have the average rating right now.
I think audiences are probably pretty high on this, probably gonna say like 86%.
No, I'm saying the average rating. I'm saying we don't have the audience score. So we gotta do the average rating out of 10.
Probably like 3 out of 5.
It's out of 10.
Oh, out of 10. Sorry. Yeah, 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. It's 6.3. Okay. Considering how long it took us to get there, that's actually pretty impressive. You were that close. I know. We don't usually do the average rating. All right. What about cinema score? What do you think the folks in Vegas, do you think they were in for the adventure?
Yeah, they probably gave it like a B+ or something.
Yep, B+, exactly. You've got them pegged. You know them pretty well at this point. Yeah. And then we'll finish out with Letterboxd. This one's out of 5.
I'm going to say 3.2.
Hey, spot on. That's the third time you've gotten the Letterboxd straight on in a row. I'm a little concerned for your brain. It must be working overtime.
Yeah.
It only has 10,000 watches on Letterboxd, so yeah, it looks like audiences are seeing this, but folks who use Letterboxd aren't, I guess.
That's why I thought Jackass Forever was doing better, because like I see a lot of people log that movie, but I haven't seen too many people log Lost City so far.
Let's finish the show out with a review of 7 Days. Now this is one that we actually got to kind of squeeze in toward the end of the week here, and I'm kind of happy we did, because I was telling Will, I was like, you know what, we haven't done kind of just like a low-key indie that we both have watched and we're both reviewing in quite a while. And this is a movie that premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival last June, and I remember hearing about it. I remember hearing that it was kind of nice, and so we both checked it out very recently. This is it's technically a romantic comedy. I think it's more of like romantic dramedy, but depends on the way you like to describe things, I guess.
I like to think we're doing 2 rom-coms this week.
Yeah, you just want to keep it clean, sure.
But one rom-com is like, like we said, a blockbuster, a rarity for the genre now. Like a movie that like the studio went behind it, clearly put a lot of money, put A-list stars at the forefront and even in the supporting cast. And then we have 7 Days, which is a much, smaller film. It's a little bit more contained, even you could even say a bottle film.
A bottle episode of a film. Yeah. So this movie, it was directed by Roshan Sethi. This is his first film, his directorial debut. He co-wrote the screenplay with one of the co-stars, Karan Soni. Karan Soni, and I might not be pronouncing that correctly, you might recognize him. He played the character Dopinder in Deadpool. And Deadpool 2, I guess he showed up in there, I want to say.
Yeah.
He's an Indian-American actor and comedian. Seen him in, I think like commercials as well. He co-stars in this film, very small cast, but the main two characters we see for most of the film are him and Geraldine Viswanathan, who we've seen her in quite a few things popping up over the last few years. You know, she was in one of her last like major roles was Bad Education.
Yeah.
Back in 2020. Yeah. She was quite good in Hala, I think that was like an Apple film that premiered at Sundance.
Never got around to seeing that, but I heard it was good.
It was good. It was not one that I think like, Will, you're missing out. Like you're going to, hate yourself if you never see it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. But I didn't see
her other movie, The Broken Hearts Gallery.
Oh, that was not very good. But that's an interesting one because that's like another studio rom-com.
Right.
Not a blockbuster. But yeah, that was like another like attempt to kind of revive the studio rom-com. But that had the unfortunate timing of coming out or supposed to be coming out around the pandemic. So I think they kind of threw that on to mostly a VOD release. I think it got like a drive-in.
It got a theatrical kind of release. Yeah, mostly in drive-ins in September of 2020. So really at the height of like when people were kind of nervous about theaters still. Like around the Tenet time.
Yeah, I remember thinking that movie was not very good, but she was great. And it was like, clearly she deserves better than this. Like she deserves a better rom-com than what you got there. So that's why I was curious about this film.
Yeah, very much so, because, you know, following her career since Blockers in 2018, one of her, I think her first like major role, where she was one of the kids in that, one of the teenagers. And, you know, from that movie, I think a lot of people, myself included, were like, hey, like, here, this person has quite a star quality to them, like very charismatic, very fun to watch. She was in another movie that year called The Package, which was just kind of like this raunchy, weird film. That I don't know. I don't even know if you saw that.
That was a Netflix one. I didn't watch it. I remember seeing.
I've seen the thumbnail. Yeah, yeah.
It's about a guy get his ding dang cut off or something like
his
that.
His ding dang. Okay.
Is that the plot of the movie? Like his dongle gets just removed and
Your choice of words is very refreshing to me. It's very fun.
Okay, I'm trying to keep this PG, John. I'm not trying to get the explicit rating on the iTunes category, whatever. So
the ding dang dong, not to Home Alone to it. Okay, so then she also was a voice actor in that movie Rumble, the Paramount Plus animated, computer animated sports film. It came out last year.
I saw a trailer for that before Rise of Skywalker. And I was like, that looks not very good.
Right. They kind of dropped it unceremoniously in December.
Yeah, because I was I think I saw a trailer for that before, like Ron's Gone Wrong or something. One of the animated movies.
Yeah, probably.
We covered on the show, and I was like, that still hasn't come out. And then they just kind of just dumped it on Paramount Plus.
Which I don't know if it's good or not. I think the Rotten Tomatoes score, we don't have time to play the game, but I think it was like in the middle, like 40s or 50s. So like not supposed to be terrible or anything, but just, you know, pretty average, right? But she voiced a character in that. So she has a lot of stuff coming around, you know. Her next big project is Cat Person, which is based on the short story from 2017 that was quite bit of a shakeup of a story, especially in the years that followed and like some of the controversy that came out of it. I think we're going to have a fun conversation about that movie when it comes out. It stars Emilia Jones, who just got her CODA win, right?
I was going to say, is she the lead in that, or was she just playing?
No, co-star, co-star. Yeah, she co-stars. Okay. Emilia Jones and Nicholas Braun are the two main characters of the film.
Okay, well, that's going to be a spicy conversation, I guess. I assume so.
But we can talk about the TV stuff. I know you're more familiar with her TV work on Miracle Workers, right?
Yes, which also stars Kieran Sonny. Am I pronouncing that right?
It could be Karan. I'm not sure.
Karan Sonny?
Okay. Something, we apologize, as usual, for not knowing.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm just generally bad name. So, but yeah, I mean, I know they are on that show together, and they work together very well. And that was another reason why I was very excited to see this film.
Mm-hmm. We also have Mark Duplass, who just has a voice role. This is a Duplass Brothers Productions film, which is one of the other reasons I was like, I usually go to bat for the Duplass Brothers Productions films. Sure. I usually find them charming. Yeah.
Yeah. And they tend to do better about making movies about and during the pandemic, it seems, at least based on this film.
Right. Well, they did another one pretty recently, right? The
Language Lessons.
Language Lessons, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, I like that movie. It kind of got a quiet release last year, but we saw that South by the previous year, and we both liked that.
Yeah, quite good. And this is another COVID movie. It was definitely more COVID-centric than I was expecting. The plot basically follows, it's like right before the pandemic, the shelter in place started. So like March 2020, and it centers around
thick. They lay it on thick.
They do.
Sure. Yeah.
It makes me wonder too, you know, like I looked it up, cause I was like, when did they shoot this? It had to have been pretty early in the pandemic. And sure enough, they shot it in summer of 2020 over the course of just 8 days. So you can kind of tell, because like clearly like the COVID and the stuff around it has changed so much since this movie was like, you know, made. But anyway, the movie is about two Indian American 20 somethings. They're quite young, and their parents have them on these like Indian dating apps where they have to like meet people, like meet strangers, and hopefully find love and everything. And if you're not familiar with like arranged marriages or courtship in the Indian American circle. You know, there's a lot of like traditionalism involved. There's a lot of like your parents setting you up. It's not technically like your parents decide and you have no choice or anything like that. Like, oh, you have to marry this person. But it's more of just like they kind of push you in that direction. They set you up on dates. We saw a lot of this in like The Big Sick, for example, with, you know, his character was a Pakistani. And so, you know, kind of in that, like, I don't want to say world, but in that, like, you know, same vein, I guess. Now, in this movie, it opens up with a kind of first date, a blind date, where the two characters, as we mentioned, Karen Soni plays a man, a young man named Ravi. He's very sheltered. He's very traditional. He, like, has a great relationship with his mom, and he's kind of just like a lonely guy. He wants to find the one. He gets set up with this girl named Rita, played by Geraldine, and, you know, they seem to kind of hit it off. Like, she's kind of just, like, you know, kind of meek, kind of like, oh, you know, this is nice. You know, she seems to be, like, somebody who is what he's looking for. And then COVID happens and they kind of get forced to sort of be in like shelter in place together because he can't get home and he has to stay at her apartment and hijinks ensue. But then also one of the funnier things too is that he finds out that, you know, maybe there's more to her, that she was kind of hiding from him. Maybe she's not the traditional Indian American girl that, you know, he was told about, and they have to sort of kind of navigate this next like week of their lives, which is very tumultuous with COVID happening and everything. And it's funny because like it is a comedy. Like, there's funny stuff in here. It's also very dramatic. And as I mentioned before, it's very, very COVID centric. And I think like it speaks to how good I think the movie is in terms of its writing and its plotting and its characterization, that I don't mind that. I feel like I should have hated this because of that. Like, been like, oh my gosh, I don't want to go through this. I don't want to relive anything about the pandemic. And I still don't. But I think this movie has so much charm that it kind of sold me, you know, in spite of all of that. But what about you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'm of the opinion that, I mean, even 2 years removed from the start of COVID, we're kind of in this weird phase where it's like, how do we really normalize this in a movie? It's like, it's hard not to really, you know, like either make it sensational or really kind of like overdo it in a particular way. And I think this movie, because probably the Duplass influence, is a little bit better at navigating that. I know there was another rom-com I saw at South by last year. I forget the title of, I think it was called The End of It. It was a BuzzFeed produced rom-com. It had a very sort of similar premise to this, where they really leaned in heavily into the COVID-ness and like all the different things that happened. And that movie I felt didn't really work because it was so focused on the COVID thing that they didn't really make the characters stand out in any particular way. And I think this movie's, it has a lot of that stuff, but I think it doesn't become quite as annoying because it's really more about establishing their characteristics while it's all happening. And they highlight it a lot, but it's not like the central focus of the film for the most part. Like, it's just something that's happening in their lives in this different sort of changing period in their lives to begin with. And I think that is really where it's able to find its stride. But also, I just think it's because these two actors just have really strong chemistry together. Even when they're meant to not really like each other, they have kind of a good back and
they're
forth.
They're mismatched.
Right. But they have a good, the key is that even when they're mismatched, they have a good sort of camaraderie together. You know, it's that mentality of like, even though they don't really work together yet, they still have a kind of weird spark that brings them together. And I think this movie isn't perfect about finding that balance, but it's a little bit better. It's good enough where I think it finds a good sort of rhythm. Like you were saying to me off the air, it has a very breezy feel to it that makes it a sort of agreeable, you know, decent sort of low stakes rom-com thing. And yeah, I mean, it's not like an amazing movie, but I think it's a very comfortable and enjoyable watch to be sure.
Now, I do have to mention a friend of the show, Preeti Chipper, her brother is actually in this movie. And which is funny because like he has like a very, very quick cameo, blink and you'll miss him. But Vinny Chipper is in this movie as a guy named Vinny. And so I don't want to shout that out because Preeti's been on the show. She's great. And, you know, always kind of fun to see. I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, but she's always kind of like hyping up her brother's work.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, kind of cool to see there.
Yeah, that's nice. Was she the person that joined you for the Hobbs and Shaw conversation?
Right, because I was searching for somebody who would talk to me about Hobbs and Shaw without trying to insult me and bully me, and that was tough, you know?
Yeah, that would have been a more masculine episode, I guess, if I was on it. Oh, it would have been a lot more
No, it would have been toxic. It would have been like, oh my gosh, sure. you would have been like, calling me names and making fun, making me feel bad.
I'm sure that conversation that you two had was a lot more sweet natured than what we would have had. So, yeah, but I still hate that movie. So that probably worked out.
I guess so. But yeah, we also have Aparna Nancharla. I'm not great with the pronunciations. The comedian who we've seen her in a bunch of things, like she was in the Amy Schumer thing, Inside Amy Schumer, I want to say. We've seen her lots of films and I think some TV stuff. I think the most recent thing was Search Party. I think she was on. I haven't seen Search Party, but
Search Party,
she's good in it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Okay, good. There you go. Maybe one of these days I am going to get to it. I have it saved on my HBO Max, so we'll get there. I think this is a very lovely film. Kind of to what you're saying, I think the chemistry between these two characters is so interesting to me because it's one of those things where I'm not rooting for them to get together like at all, but I'm rooting for them to just get to know each other and to love each other platonically. And I'm not going to say anything about what happens in the movie, you know, to that effect, but I just think this movie really rides that balance well of like, how does attraction work and how does like friendship work? And like, what are the rules of dating? What are the limitations of like meeting somebody and not knowing them and, you know, potentially spending the rest of your life with someone you barely know? Because there's this whole thing about how he idolizes his mother. He has super close relationship with her and he feels like it doesn't make any sense that she got divorced because, you know, she had only known her husband for 7 days before they got, I think, engaged or married or something to that effect. And I think just before they got married, right? And he believes in marriage. She doesn't. She's just like, marriage is a crock. And so like, yeah, they're mismatched. They don't have the same philosophies, but them kind of connecting anyway is just, I love that kind of stuff, you know? And I think the movie handles that really well. I think that the writing here is quite good. And I think that these actors and writers, like everybody involved, are just supremely talented because they pulled off something during the pandemic about a subject matter that should not work and about COVID itself that I think is not aged super well. Like, it's very dated, but not that any of it's like incorrect necessarily or like inaccurate, but
yeah, it's
jarring.
It's a little bit more over the top, exactly. I guess, which is what comedy is.
I guess, why the movie, you know, had kind of a quiet release, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be weird because I feel like there are more movies like this, maybe not in this vein, but more movies that are filmed around or written around COVID that are going to be coming out. Mm-hmm. They're going to probably feel more and more outdated. I mean, we have The Bubble coming up this upcoming Friday, and I mean, I hope it's good, but I feel like that's going to be a good example of like, this is a movie that was written in 2020 and now it's coming out in 2022. And we're like already past what we felt about COVID in 2020. Like, we have all this new information, all these different things that just going to feel like coming out of the gate, feeling like it's like a year old. And I do kind of worry about like the shelf life of some of these COVID movies because of that. But I think like this one, I don't think it's going to age like amazingly, but I think the heart of it just has a really interesting core relationship. And like you said, it has, you know, the cultural background that we just don't really see a lot in these movies. And I think that really drives it a lot. But also, I just think, just the clear star power of Geraldine Viswanathan. Is just so apparent. And I think, you know, I already said this to you, and for some reason you thought this was an insult, but I think she has an amazing American accent. Like, I never really even think about how she's Australian when she speaks.
That's
true. I mean, yeah, I think she is a very natural American accent. And
I didn't say it was an insult.
Yeah, well, you were just like, you thought it might have been an insult.
I thought you were teeing out to be like, but, and I was like, no, you need to be nice.
No, yeah, and I was like, you know, she just has a really great American, and she, like I said, she's like, it's a very funny, very charismatic actress. And yeah, I'm hoping that she really gets more standout star roles. I mean, I don't know what's going to come for her in the future, but like I said, I really enjoy the work she's been doing of late. And I think she has a lot of really great stuff ahead of her. So I hope this is just one of many stepping stones to come.
Yeah, because she's just one of those actors who plays a character who, if you don't play it right, you could run into the trap of the audience thinking you're unlikable. But she just brings that empathy to a flawed person, you know, somebody who makes mistakes, but loves herself and is confident in herself, has her foibles, has her character arc, but you got to root for her. Like, I, you know, she's kind of an irresistible character in this. And yeah, I think Karen Stoney too. I think he takes a character that at first glance might seem super pathetic, and I mean, in some ways kind of is, but just has such a big heart, you know, you just can't help but feel for the guy and love the guy, you know, and it's really good character writing. And
it's very earnest.
And yeah, I do think that, you know, what keeps this film, I think, for greatness or anything, I guess it's the fact that when it does get to the COVID stuff, it gets away from, I think, the more interesting things going on in this film about the subtleties of, you know, the traditional dating lifestyle. And, you know, it uses the pandemic to its advantages, sure. But, I think like a movie like The Pink Cloud, for example, that kind of explores something similar, but certainly much more heightened and surreal and dark. I think that movie is, you know, it's going to hit certainly in a more lasting way. It's going to stick with you more because it's fully committing to its theme. It's fully sort of trying to like really get you into a dark sort of mode. And this movie doesn't really attempt that and doesn't need to. Yeah. I think it's just its own thing, I guess, in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that nails it because, like you said, The Pink Cloud is a movie that, you know, it wasn't made during COVID, just happened to come out around the time, but it just captured that mood in a way that felt, you know, fairly focused and a lot more true to life. Whereas a lot of movies like this, where they're trying to go with the like semi-comedic approach, it can be a little bit, I don't know, it's not like being flippant about it, but it just kind of feels like they're just trying to like really strain to find the humor in something that, you know, was pretty traumatic and devastating. You could do that, certainly, but you kind of have to do it, you know, pretty directly. And like movies like this, or, you know, where are some of the other COVID comedies we've gotten?
Well, I was about to say, memorable. Well, there's Recovery, which I think is just pure funny. Eh. You know, it's funny I actually think it's a very funny movie. It's one of the funniest movies of last year. Just saying.
Wow, okay. Yeah, but, like, you were a lot stronger than I was, but I feel like I'm kind of about the same. Maybe I like this one a little bit more.
This one has a little bit more of a heart to it. But I will say, like, this is so much better than something like Lockdown. Like, it really is. Like, and it proves
Lockdown was awful. Yeah,
it proves that like Lockdown, like the problem with that movie was not that it was about COVID stuff or that it had COVID stuff in it. Like, that's not the issue with that movie. It was the fact that it was just bad. Like, it was just not a well-written film. It was not a film made with, I think, passion and like a story that they really wanted to tell. They just felt obligated to make a buck off of the current event.
Yeah. Right. Which, when you do that, it feels very opportunistic. And so I think, like,
I think probably my favorite COVID film that's like been in the COVID realm is probably I'm Fine, Thanks for Asking. I just think that movie,
It was pretty good.
I think what I like about that movie over a lot of these other ones is that it has the COVID stuff in it, but it focuses on, I think, a more big picture, you know, like undercurrent of like what people like were really going through during that time in a much more serious but also light, you know, touching way. Sure. That's the movie that probably sticks with me the most.
You didn't see Zeros and Ones, right?
Didn't see which one?
Zeros and Ones, the Abel Ferreira movie.
No, I didn't see that.
Okay. That's probably the COVID movie that's stuck with me more than most, but
I'm,
I know you haven't seen
it. I'm itching to see it because, you know, I love Abel Ferreira.
Yeah, that's a curious film. I'm very curious to hear what you think about that one.
We're just all curious, I guess. I don't have anything. If I feel like I keep talking about this movie, I'm going to give stuff away. So yeah, I just want to say, I recommend it. Yeah. If you happen to catch it, if it's playing at your local art house theater, it's certainly worth an afternoon watch on a Sunday. If you check this out on streaming, it's also a good choice. It's quite good. Quite nice.
Yeah. It'll make a lovely Hulu watch later down the road. Whenever
you think
it'll
hit Hulu?
Probably Hulu. Where else would it go? Netflix, HBO Max.
I'm not sure.
Paramount Plus.
This is Cinedigm, and for the Duplass brothers, I guess it depends, huh? Because where did Language Lessons go? Did that go?
I think that went to Hulu. Yeah, I think that went to Hulu.
Yeah, maybe they'll keep that trend going because they did. Horse Girl was Netflix, and then Creep. Where was that? I think Creep was just like in theaters, or maybe it was VOD.
Maybe it'll go on to Amazon Prime. Who knows?
Who knows? It'll end up somewhere. If you happen to catch it, might be worth a look.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had more to say about both these films, but I think they're just both kind of fine. I think this one's better for sure, but yeah, they're both, you know, they do what they set out to do, some a little bit better than others. I prefer this approach, certainly, but yeah, they're both, if you're looking for something nice and comedic and romantic, you can certainly do worse than either of these films.
And it won Best First Feature at the Independent Spirit Awards. So it did get something this past award season.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now, I do have the reported. I'm checking Rotten Tomatoes, see is it going to work? And I don't think it's going to work, Will Ashton. So I guess we'll have to make do with what we have here. Mm. But that's all right. We'll do what we can.
Sure. Yeah.
So we have let me give you a little bit of heads. We got 40 reviews counted.
Yeah.
So we can guess the RT score and we can guess the weighted average out of 10. But yeah, what do you think the RT score is?
I am going to say 73%.
It's a little bit higher, Will Ashton. Okay. A little bit higher. It's 83%.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's doing well with critics. They like it.
How about that?
Were you expecting that they'd be like, no thanks. COVID, hate it.
I don't know. It's such a slight movie that I could see some critics being like, oh, why bother?
But turning their nose up at it.
You know how people are.
I do. It's not ideal. Okay, but what do you think the average rating is out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes?
6?
6.5. You're not too far. Okay. Yeah, 6.5 out of 10.
That's what I guess for Lost City.
Yeah, you were channeling when you were trying to use your mind control powers, which they're still evolving. We're giving you some time. We're helping you out, giving you practice.
What was the average score for Lost City, if you remember?
3.2. 3.2. Okay. Oh, you mean on RT?
Yeah.
On RT, it was 6.3. Okay. I have to look it up again. So I actually don't remember.
This is getting better reviews than the Lost City. I think that's fair.
I think so.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be upset if I misdirected you. So I'm double checking now. And okay, it looks like it was 6.3. Okay. Guess you're right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but they're both in like that, like 3 out of 5, maybe 2.5 out of 5, which is about accurate.
Well, you know what? That brings us to Letterboxd. What do you think it is on Letterboxd? We have 740 watches. So, yeah, definitely an indie. But yeah, what do you think the average rating is there?
Is it 3.4?
3.3.
Okay.
Yeah. So, still, 3.3, higher than Lost City there as well. Just barely.
Yeah. I mean,
one episode we talked about the Oscars. We got we got to talk about some like romantic films. It's just a romantic week for us cinemaholics. We love it.
Yeah. But then next week is that's the thing, right? So I'm seeing Everything Everywhere at Once on Wednesday.
And I saw it last week.
Yeah.
Which is why it opened in select theaters in I think here in San Francisco, but then also LA and New York this past weekend. And so a lot of critics saw it. There were screenings and everything around that time. And people are like, this is it. This is the best movie of 2022
That's
right
what
now.
I'm hearing. Yeah. And it got a great response from South by Southwest.
It did.
As well.
And you know what? Well, yeah. I don't want to steer you a certain way. I don't want to inflate your expectations. Sure. But I can easily say right now, I'm itching for this conversation because this is one of the most WTF movies. I genuinely feel like this is what it must have been like watching The Matrix as an adult.
Oh, okay.
Like I watched it as a kid, right? Like I watched it, and when it was on like DVD or whatever, and after the hype had sort of like already settled a bit.
Yeah, bullet time was commonplace in society and all
right,
that stuff.
Like, yeah, we knew what was going on with all that. Like all that stuff had sort of permeated. This movie is just like, what in the world? The Daniels, I don't know.
I love them.
What is like fueling their cinematic, ideation, but it is something that I don't fully understand. And I have so much to say. Can't wait for you to see it.
I mean, I loved Swiss Army Man. That was my favorite movie of 2016. I'm very excited to see what they're doing together with their follow-up. So I'm hoping I love it. And I think I'm seeing that at the IMAX.
That's gonna be even better. I hope you do. Cause it's an IMAX worthy movie. And one thing too, well, I'm going to say it, I think that, I think that this coming episode of the show, some people might be a little sad that we're not going to be talking about Morbius.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I was going to ask you is that, I mean, I'll see Morbius if we need to, maybe we'll even,
I'm going to watch Morbius on Wednesday. So I am going to see it.
So maybe we can even invite friend of the show Matt Serafini on as our resident Spider-Man fan.
I don't know. Is it a Spider-Man kind of film? I mean, it's in that world, but...
Yeah. Spider-Man's going to be a factor in it. He might meet Spider-Man at some point if the film and the franchise pick up. But, I mean, would people rather us talk about that over Everything Everywhere at Once?
I don't think so. I think that's going to be the far more interesting conversation. So
right.
We'll make sure to cover it, sure. But I'm certainly not expecting that you're going to talk about it. We also have we do have a new Richard Linklater film coming out.
Yes, I was going to say, yes. So we have a new Linklater movie and we have a new Judd Apatow movie, as I mentioned earlier in the show.
We do.
Both coming to Netflix. And we got that Moonshot movie with that's on HBO Max.
Which is I feel okay skipping. Moonshot with Cole Sprouse and like Zach Braff and another streaming exclusive movie. Oh, yeah. Lana Condor.
Yeah, I was going to say Lana Condor is in that one. And I know that based on our previous conversations about to all the boys I loved before, that listeners, I guess, really like our conversations about her past films. So I don't know.
That's true.
I feel like there's room to, push Morbius out. But if people really want to hear us talk about it, I'm not opposed to seeing it. I just, if I had the means to not see it, I would probably pursue them.
I don't have high expectations for this Morbius movie. And there's also The Contractor, the new Chris Pine movie.
Is that a real movie or is that like a Amazon show?
It's Paramount and STX.
Okay.
So,
because the poster looks like a Jack Ryan or like a Reacher or like a whatever else.
Yeah. It's like, Ben Foster, Gillian Jacobs, they're all in it. I'm probably not going to watch this. It's going to hit VOD and theaters at the same time. On April 1st, and I don't care about this movie, but and then also Better Nate Than Never, that Disney Plus thing with Ruby Wood and Joshua Bassett, which
now I know that's not a real thing, right? That doesn't exist.
Better Nate Than Never, we've talked about it.
I know, I just refuse to believe that exists with a title called Better Nate Than Never.
Yeah, it's a musical family comedy.
Sure,
why are you bullying
this
movie?
Whatever you can say whatever you want about it, I don't believe it exists.
All right. Well, yeah. I'll stay away from your wrath. Also going to be seeing Sonic the Hedgehog 2 this coming weekend. And it's going to be coming out the next following week. And I assume that'll be the big movie for us, along with the ambulance. Not to get even further ahead. I apologize. I'm just,
Is that coming up this following week? I didn't realize that's coming up so soon, ambulance.
April's going to be a big month, especially compared to March, because then we have Fantastic Beasts coming out.
Bathe their breath for that one.
Yeah, well, and we have The Northman, one of your most anticipated films.
Yes, and the Nicolas Cage Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
That's
coming up that same weekend. So, yeah.
So there is going to be a lot to discuss coming ahead on Cinemaholics. We'll be here for all of it. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher of choice and check out our Patreon if you'd like to support us. We always appreciate the donations. Or check out our merch page if you'd like to buy some merch to support us that way on cinemaholics.com. Find us on social media however you like. And we'll see you all in the next episode of the show. From the Internet California, I am John Negroni.
And for the Internet Pennsylvania, I'm Weston.
See you next time.